Senor Rabbi, it is another bright day here in the studio as we begin a Priest and a Rabbi podcast. And my brother, I've missed you.
It's a Groundhog Day here.
Yes.
Every day.
Every day. Well, every Friday.
Every Friday.
We're in a
but every day it's sunny, it's hot.
Paradise. It's getting more and more humid, so the rabbi and I are actually, we are located in Stuart, Florida, and so now it's becoming more and more humid progressively every day, which is good for the skin.
It's good for my pool.
Yes.
My pool now is 86 degrees.
It's good for air conditioning companies, you know.
Yes.
So, but anyways, what today's show is really good about is that we're going to be following from the last podcast, which really was examining, again, we're fascinated with the development and growth of humanism. People who identify as humanist, atheist, or agnostic. I think we can edit that out.
It's looking at the growth and the seeming decline, perhaps, of community. You know, what brings one in, and you know where the exit may be for some. You know, yeah. What is it? What are the trends? How do we address them?
Right, and that's what last week's conversation went into. So it's not just about, let's just talk about atheism and agnosticism and humanism, but what's that relationship where we're going, as at least as Americans in the 21st century, with community? So we're going to go further with that. We actually have a special guest for that. We have...
Which is your greatest community.
Yes.
Which is familial.
Yes. Yes, the number one community. So my father is coming on. So, Dad, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Yeah. So all of you out there, so my father is on here not just because it's cute and fun to do, but my father's been working on a piece of work that he started 25 years ago or 20 years ago about called The Decline of Face-to-Face and How We Compensate for It. And it's just I'm just amazed how now this has been a hot topic for us, that you were thinking about this 20, 25 years ago of seeing this movement away from wanting to really have – face-to-face community, and we kind of like being more by ourselves or communicating on our own terms through everything from a telegraph to text messaging or
little I's and O's.
The I's and O's. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. That's what we're going to be getting into. We want to thank you so much for tuning into this podcast, whatever platform you're on right now. And we're always so grateful when you subscribe. It really helps us to get to know and understand like who's out there. And when you leave comments about what you want us to talk about, we get into that. Because, again, this is a form of community we have here. We always think in the flesh community is the best. But we love for you to be here and to give us a rating and to share with those around you. So when you take a screenshot of whatever your platform may be, and to throw that out on Twitter or social media and just say, hey, these two goofy guys, a priest and a rabbi, talk about some fun stuff. So that's so we just thank you for that. And if you could do that, that'd be awesome. We're going to get into the show. Dad, are you ready for this?
Absolutely.
All right.
Totally.
Rabbi, are you ready for this?
Born ready.
Beyonce, are you ready for this? All right. Let's get into it.
The opinions expressed on this program are those of the program hosts and their guests and are not necessarily those of WSTU, St. Mary's Episcopal Church, and Temple Beit Haim. Products that may be mentioned are not necessarily intended as an endorsement. Any reproduction or retransmission of this broadcast is strictly prohibited. And now, WSTU presents A Priest and a Rabbi. Call in with questions and comments at 220-9788. 220-WSTU. Now, here's your host.
Well, good morning, everybody, here in Stuart. This is Father Christian from St. Mary's Episcopal Church here in Stuart, Florida. And I have with me the best-looking rabbi that is on this side of the Mississippi. If you are on the other side of the Mississippi, send us a picture of your rabbi, and we will compare and take notes. Just kidding. It's not that kind of show. But is it?
It could be.
It could be.
March
rabbi.
Madness idea.
Pardon me?
March Madness idea.
Yes, exactly. So that would sound so reverent for us to get pictures of rabbis and priests and start to do sort of like a face smash.
Mm.
Who's your cutest rabbi?
I think it's been done.
I'm sure.
I think people have done it.
Do you think there's a calendar?
There could be a calendar. There could be a market for it.
There is a calendar, actually, of Roman Catholic priests that went out. And all the men were very easy on the eyes, from what I understand from the ladies. And it was a calendar that was sold by one of the churches. And just all these, the men of the cloth that were, could pass for models.
Wow.
Yeah. And then they sold that. And, you know.
What shade of black are you wearing? That's what they might be looking at.
Well, there's different accoutrements you can wear as a clergy member. You know, you got the cope, you got the just the shirt. You can do the
whole chasuble. How bleached is your collar? How white is your collar?
Yeah. Yeah. So, anywho, how you doing this morning, brother?
How am I doing? I'm doing well. I'm doing well. I'm a little tired. It's been a long week.
Is your wife still out in the Holy Land, out in California? She was all over the place.
My wife's been away a lot over the last month. My wife took a ton of students to Israel for 2 weeks, part of Hillel. She returned back. She was in home for a week, and then she had a women's rabbinic conference out in Claremont, California.
Yes.
So my wife returned back about a day or two ago, and then she's off to Chicago next Thursday with my oldest to take her to Jewish summer camp in, 2 hours west of Chicago in Wisconsin.
Okay.
So, you know, we had a little moment a couple days ago. So I'm getting up. My kids are getting ready for school, getting ready for camp, I should say. And, you know, we're just about to leave the house. And I have in my bathroom, I have a, like a vanity sink and this, that, and the other. So I open it up to grab, you know, Q-tips, as one does, to refresh one's ears.
There's a snake.
No, there was a tremendous amount of hair that I noticed under my sink. It was blonde hair. And I got 3 blonde kids. So I thought to myself, okay, relax. Maybe it's not their hair. Maybe it's one of those American Girl dolls that my kids have. We have many, 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 many dolls. So I thought, okay, maybe they took scissors and cut their dolls' hair. So I summoned all my kids. And I said, okay, which one of you cut your hair? And my oldest goes, wasn't me, Dad. You know, I made that mistake 3 years ago. 3 years ago, my oldest took scissors and made bangs for herself. It took 2 years to grow out. She said, I made that mistake, Dad. Wasn't me. Look at my middle one. She just shrugs her shoulders and goes, wasn't me. And then I look at my youngest, and I can see her pacing backwards and forwards, and goes, "I go, did you cut your hair?" And she goes, "Yeah, but you don't understand. My hair was so crazy. I just had to cut it." And I go, "But you didn't cut a little bit. I mean, it's mounds of hair." So she took scissors and cut all of her hair and kind of left it. And the only phrase that I remember her saying to me as we were leaving the door is leaving the house, is she gave me this kind of like sullen look and said, just please don't tell Mom. And I said, well, it's pretty obvious. You got a ton of your hair. Are you going to do it again? And she said, well, if my hair's crazy, yeah. And we said, okay, scissors out of the house. So that was one of my mornings the other day. Kind of brought me back to reality a little bit of having 3 kids and
Rabbi Dad life. Is this the daughter who was in your office when I came to visit you the other day?
No, that's my oldest.
Oh, okay.
My youngest.
Okay.
She's 3 and yeah.
Well, you know, she's going to learn. Maybe you can get some dye and have some fun with it and create something, a nice art project out of her hair.
My oldest has done that. Yeah. You know, I'm trying to take pink hair dye and dye her hair pink.
Yeah, this is the joys. This is the joys of parenthood, my brother, and you're in the thick of it. So.
I keep saying to my kids, you know what you should do? We should surprise Father Anderson and go to his house. And when we're there, I said, you guys can do your hair just like Father Anderson. Because yeah. It's like beautiful locks. Spend the time. I mean, I don't know how long it takes you. I think you mentioned before about 45 minutes.
This is so not true. I never said it took 45 minutes to cut my hair.
Not to cut.
I blow dry my hair.
To style and yes. To blow dry one's hair. I said, you guys can do it together with Father Anderson.
And what they say?
My oldest was super excited.
See, there you go. But now I cut my hair, so now it's short. All right. So enough of this. This is not a hair show. This is not a parenting show, but we do enjoy talking about all those things.
Oh, it could be a parenting show, because we have a very special guest here today.
Yes.
Your father.
Yes, my father, Burr Anderson, Esquire, is here today to rap. Something that we have in common, Rabbi, besides God and being men of the cloth, is that we both have parents in the legal world, correct?
Yes.
Yes, yes, we do. So, Dad, Burr Anderson, welcome to the show all the way from Chicago.
Good morning.
It's good to have you on here.
I'm honored to be here.
And so this all worked out. We're not just having my dad on here because this is like just a kitschy thing. Let's have our dad on here. Because last time we had some parents on here, it was my mom, and we were talking about the call to the priesthood and what was it like for a parent to experience a child going through the call and saying, I think I want to become a priest. See episode 8 or something like that on the podcast. But today, we're continuing our conversation from last week where we had Reverend John Tarek. We had Joe Beck from the humanitarian...
The humanists of the Treasure Coast.
The humanists of the Treasure Coast. Forgive me, Joe. And we were talking about, you know, why is the rise of agnosticism, atheism, of humanism happening right now, especially in Gen Y, Gen Z. It's double the rates. And then, you know, Reverend John Tarek brought up this point of, well, also this is matched with this steady decline in membership in community-based organizations of affiliation, whether it's everything from Elks Lodge to Rotary to golf club memberships, to just various ways that people, baseball, sports, come together. And so we are always fascinated, the rabbi and I, with exploring what is there a connection and relationship between, because the religious community stands for community, of bringing people together, people of God. We find God in one another. We find love and compassion in one another, forgiveness and healing through one another. And if we're not coming together, are we losing that touch with God? So today we want to talk about is our ability to not really commune with one another linked to this idea of our loss of touch with God, right? So, Dad, we wanted to bring you on because you have dabbled in this and you've been working on a piece of work for quite some time. This has been a conversation for you for quite some time. You've been working on a book called The Decline of Face-to-Face and How to Compensate for It. And this was like 20 years ago.
I love how you have to look at notes.
Well, I want to nail it. I don't want to pronounce my...
It's your dad.
It's my dad's book incorrectly. I want to get it... Yeah, that's a long title. That's a long title. I don't want to be off by one word, misrepresent.
True.
So, Dad, you know, not only... I'm saying this because I'm your son, but I was blown away by thinking... I remember us sitting around the dinner table and you talking about this like 20 years ago of how where we're at today of this constant pull that we have where maybe we don't want face-to-face interaction with one another as Americans. And this is before social media took off. Text messaging was in the play. And you were doing you're looking back at the Telegraph and talking about how this has just been a steady increase that's been happening in America. So we want to talk about that today. That's why we brought you on. And can you just talk a little bit more about the thumbnail? The book that you've been working on, is it really more about the disuniting of America, or just the isolationist of America, isolationism of Americans within the country, or just like a different way of us trying to find community, which is not so much intimate and face to face, but we would like to have some distance from one another?
Yeah, I think it's all of those things. You mentioned the organizations and affiliations that are out there that have dwindled or lost membership, and in the world of bowling. Bowling leagues have lost their size. Much fewer people are in bowling leagues. But there has been an increase in the people who like to go to the bowling alley to bowl alone.
Hmm. But they're actually going to the bowling alley.
Yeah, they go to the alley and they're there for an hour and a half or whatever, just bowl by themselves.
There's been an increase in that.
Yeah, it's been a jump in that steadily over the years.
Oh, my gosh.
So I think that... there is all three of those things you mentioned, I think, are at play in my book. This phenomenon that we're talking about with a reversion or a preference for virtual rather than actual social contact, it's an incremental thing. You mentioned the Telegraph. The Telegraph was at the time considered a very radical development technologically in the world, and the reaction of the press and people to it is similar to what the reaction of the internet was when it came out as a World Wide Web, you know, about 25 years ago, that this was the idea that the mind is here and there. And I think what I look at in my book is this steady historic shift from a defined here and there to, like, there is no here and there. We're all together, you know, on the internet, or on a cell phone. We're interacting at the same time, and we're all connected. And what I see is that the fact that there is no surge in connection, and that people use this technology actually to have the charm of distance. sort of like the telegraph, so that I have emails now at work where people are asking me, when's a good time to talk? I'm getting an email to inquire, like making an appointment to pick up the phone and call me, you know. So instead of picking up the phone and call me, instead of people coming by your house to say, hi, we're in the neighborhood, you have to get permission to go to someone's house, even if you're close friends. You know, stopping in is considered now, you know, de rigueur, or not de rigueur. It's not appropriate for you to do this. So I guess what I see is a genuine feeling among people who are this alternative user that they prefer not face-to-face but rather electronic interaction, that they sincerely believe this is, if not better, certainly in parity with the face-to-face experience. Hmm.
You know, it's interesting when we think about it. I lived in Britain 18 years ago. And when I moved to Britain, I was coming home for, you know, winter break. And I was in the car, and I was texting. Because texting had taken off well before tech took off here in America. And I remember one of my brothers saying, what are you doing? And I said, oh, you know, Europe, London has this crazy thing. You can text somebody a message. And I remember my brother looking at me square in the face and said, that will never, never take off here. Now, 18 years later, it is our number one mode of communication. And I wonder, you know, Bert, for you raising a family, what were some of those – the challenges that we have today with technology and being present at a given moment, what were some of the influencers or some of the stumbling blocks when you were raising a family? I mean, clearly we didn't have cell phones. We didn't have that technology available. What was available at that time?
And very, very little of this. The internet was still in ASCII text. There wasn't any graphic technology. So raising children, I suppose we had concerns about how much television they were watching, and games were coming in. And there was this is past the ping pong, the first one. It was, I'm trying to think of the one you were very hot on.
Pong.
Yeah,
Pong, the one from Atari.
Like Atari 2600?
Yeah, and there's rows of blocks, and your objective was to shoot into.
Oh, that was amazing, yeah.
Yeah. Now I almost can think of it. But anyway, so to answer your question, Rabbi, I think it was that kind of technology. When I grew up, My parents were very concerned about the time I spent watching television. Mm-hmm. So that's a disconnector, obviously, to watch TV, and probably one of the biggest, you know, disconnectors of our century, you know, the last century. So yeah, that I would say that was it's slightly different, but it did. And I think your question is a good one, because there was a lot of time spent detached by watching television. And being involved, and say there was time spent with the video games. Super Breakout. The name of that game. You may have played it yourself. So anyway.
Interesting.
Yeah, so because I think that we get fascinated, obviously, we bring it back to as people who are helping to lead religious communities. Right. And then we see the numbers of decline that's happening pretty much across the board in America, except for Islam and Mormonism. But every denomination is experiencing a struggle with membership. And then across the board, from even secular, we were talking about the secular memberships, or you do have what things that people did as a community before are now doing solo, such as bowling. And I wonder if the same goes for also the movie theater, if there's been an incline of like solo tickets.
But also look at what the churches and many synagogues have done is through video streaming. Mm-hmm. I can watch services in the comfort of my living room without leaving my house, and I can do it in solitude. I don't have to be part of a community.
Right. And so you and I would say, Rabbi, you and I would say that that's not enough, because our growth spiritually and our growth human beings, and biblically we say this to be supported, is that it has to happen in the flesh in the community. Mm-hmm. There are certain things that happen when you come together as a community to support one another, to love one another, to feel and sense compassion from one another, to be able to hold someone's hand when they're in a joyous or a dark time. These moments that happen can only happen when we're all in this together, experiencing our weird intricacies. he's experiencing the music and the prayers and the beliefs. And we find God in one another. So I guess my concern is always, if we keep on finding more and more ways to be able to experience life on our own or on our own terms. So if I text message you, the latest Pew Research was 60% of millennials and probably other, they probably gets greater for the next generations for Gen Y, Gen Z, prefer a text message conversation over a face-to-face conversation. So if I have the choice to talk to you, this Pew Research would say I would prefer to text you. So I can control that conversation. I can control what is being said on my time. I don't have to respond right away.
It's like it's a return to the telegraph. It's the same technology as telegraph. You know, I'm giving you data, you're giving me data, and there's no spontaneity. Mm-hmm. You know.
But I also wonder too how much of it, especially when you send via text, is I'm not really waiting for a response from you. I'm just telling you my thoughts now, so that when you respond, I've already laid all the questions out on the table. So we're not actually really engaging. It's more I'm just telling you, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it could be. And there's the art of listening disappears because you're not really listening. If I'm listening, if I'm actively listening. Even if, let's say, it's a challenging conversation, I still got to look into your eyes. I got to still be present, read body language, be present with you, and then also kind of offer my time and my space to you as well. I can't, you know, I'm not going to multitask and you're trying to talk to me and have a conversation. It'd be rude for me to be doing something else. But if we're texting, I could be doing five other things. So I'm just wondering
how much of it, too, is about immediacy, right? I could have gotten on the phone. I could have called you the other day. To say, hey, when do you have time this week? When can we grab lunch? When can we share our minds and ideas and work it through? Or I could just send you a quick text that says, hey, you available this week? When is a good time? ? Right? You get back to me, well, you know, Wednesday's fine. Meet you at 2 o'clock. As opposed to, it's that immediacy, right? I don't have to wait. I can text you at a given moment. I can then lay out my schedule for the week as opposed to making that phone call, waiting for you to answer the phone, then you got to check your diary, all the stuff that leads into, I don't want to say wasted time, but today time is so pressure filled and that things have to be done in an immediate way. We're an immediate culture.
Is there also a social anxiety or a fear that, too, if I need to call, you know, if I need to set up an appointment with you, Rabbi, and if I text you to say, hey, can you meet this Thursday for lunch, as opposed to calling you, then I might get your secretary, then I'm on the phone, then I'm waiting for you, and then, oh, gosh, what if he starts talking about something else, and I get stuck in a conversation, and I got to go somewhere in 3 minutes, and I just need this answer now. Sometimes there's that fear that you don't want to call the person because they might pull you into something else, and you're like, oh, gosh, I can't call that person. It's just text, right? All this, again.
Because it's direct. You're directing your conversation of where you want it to be via text as opposed to the phone, like you said. I mean, look, it can go in weird, strange directions, but at least with a text and with social media today, it is very pointed and it is very direct.
And social media, too, is also very curated and perfect, and it's on your own terms. Again, this on your own terms thing. And so, Dad, where Rab and I are coming from, and that we're trying to explore, and we don't want to suck you – we could suck you into that conversation too. But to get your insight on this is that we're wondering if this separation that we're seeing from religious institutions, or really this rise of atheism and agnosticism, so the separation from God is connected that we're seeing in this separation we see from one another. Big theme.
Yeah, because I wanted to go back to the point you made about there are individuals who would say rather than go to the synagogue, they'll take the streaming. Mm-hmm. They're in their pajamas, you know, in the family room. Mm-hmm. And you said how important it is that there be face-to-face. And I think there are people that are just so – they're so convinced. They're getting nourished socially by this streaming or this alternative, and they really don't see the point of jumping in the car and driving to their house of worship. It's that powerful. You know, the technology has created – a reason to be secluded rather than to be connected. So there's this contradiction. It was all about connectivity when the World Wide Web came out, about, you know, everybody will, this is the greatest thing for everybody, and it has accomplished to some extent the opposite by creating opportunities for seclusion, opportunities to be disconnected.
But in your book, aren't you? You're also saying this is a direction that, because as clergymen will be like, no, it's all about community. We need to be face to face. But then, from a sociological standpoint and from a objective standpoint, would you say? And I remember you talking about this before. This is a direction that people really want to go. This is if people have the choice. This is the direction, at least in America, people actually appreciate this and want that and enjoy that more than a groupistic way of having to be involved with all these different faces and people. Would you say this is not just this horrible byproduct of social media, but actually, genuinely, the American spirit is more to be more solo, more individualistic.
Yeah, right. It's not merely settling for that alternative, but cultivating it. So there we got the individualism in our culture. We have, situations that where this comes up all the time now, and a partly laziness where you have divorce decrees now. In I think every state in the country where there is a provision about visitation. And these visitations are being done online. So rather than picking the child or children up every week, they just get on, Skype, and that's it. Dad's off the hook or whoever, So there's this – is that out of laziness? Can someone say that's a genuine alternative to having my children in my presence? And, I wonder. So I don't want to overstate it, but I think part of it is just – being lazy, wow, this is great.
It's interesting. Even when we take it from that standpoint of, congregational life, right? When you look at video streaming, what was its main intent? For those that were infirm, those that maybe were in hospitals and couldn't make it physically to services or houses of worship, that mode was available for them to bring in spirituality. What have we seen today? That there are some communities where people say, not really feeling it tonight. I'm just gonna watch services being streamed. And I think that there's a lot of meaning and there's a lot of spirituality in that. But I think also when we, as you and I have discussed a lot, the term community is about common. It's about commonality. It's about strength in numbers. It's about a shared belief system that we can come together in a mode of prayer and access where we're together, that we're in that feeling, whether it be we come for the liturgy or the music or the camaraderie or, whatever it is that builds a community is so, so important. But the shift of what its original intent was meant for and how it's been used today, I think are definitely challenges.
This is such amazing stuff here, and we would love to hear from you about what are your thoughts. Do you think that as Americans, there is a general momentum? There's a lot of stats to support this, but what do you think, that there's a genuine momentum, or do you prefer to have sort of these more controlled solo moments where you prefer more solitude, and as opposed to being thrust into a communal situation? Give us your thoughts on that here at the radio station, 772-220-9788. Do you think as Americans through the digital world that we're in right now, and not even just from a religious perspective, just across the board, that we're becoming less connected and less intimate with one another and losing genuine connection? Or are we becoming more connected than we ever have been before? And is it a good thing? So give us your opinions. We'd love to hear from you, 220-9788. And when we get back from break, we're going to go a little deeper into this. I'm just saying, really, how does this affect us in our growth and development as human beings? Our growth in neighborhoods and this genuine movement that we feel as Americans, whether it's through we're connecting through this through a digital world or not connecting enough. What does that mean for us? What does that mean for our children? And also, what does that mean from a religious perspective as a religious community? So all that's coming back up in just a few minutes.
You're listening to A Priest and a Rabbi podcast. If you haven't done so yet, make sure to subscribe. And please leave a rating and a review, 5-star rating and a positive review if you can. We certainly appreciate it. That is the best way to make sure that others out there just like you can find this podcast. If you want to get in contact with Father Christian and Rabbi Durbin, you can do so by emailing apriestandarabbi@gmail.com. And the absolute best way to get a hold of the fellas is to call into the radio show. This podcast airs live on the radio every Friday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. on WSTU 1450. And you can listen live online at WSTU1450.com. And if you want to join the show, you can call in to 772-220-9788. That's 772-220-WSTU.
Hey, everyone. This is Father Christian here on A Priest and a Rabbi. So happy for you to be here on this podcast with us. And I want to let you know that I have started a YouTube channel called Your Favorite Christian, and you can check it out on YouTube. And every Monday, I drop a new episode, and it's always through the lens of faith, but taking on different topics such as dating, relationships, marriage, pop culture. I've done one recently where I went out to the art show and talked about how do we find our relationship with God through all the what all the latest artists are doing. Last week was what do women really want in a man, and interviewing different people to be a part of that. So please check that out on YouTube. Subscribe, like, share, put on the notification so you get that every Monday. I also want to let you know of this podcast wouldn't be here if it wasn't for a generous donor from St. Mary's Episcopal Church who wishes to remain anonymous. All he asked, though, was that the information gets out that St. Mary's Episcopal Church here in Stuart has a healing center. And so you can call if you're looking for a counselor, someone to be there for you during a challenging time. And you can call the church at 772-287-3244. We also have a group of Stephen ministers who have been trained, over 50 hours of training, to be with you and walk with you during a time of crisis. They are not counselors. They are trained just to be more of the presence of Christ and walk with you during a time of crisis, whether it's a good crisis of having, oh my gosh, my daughter's about to get married, or if there's something a little bit heavier. So give us a call, 772-287-3244, and I thank that anonymous donor who makes this all possible. All right, God bless you, and enjoy the rest of the podcast. And we are back on the air here at A Priest and a Rabbi. This is Father Christian along with Rabbi Matthew Durbin from Temple Beit Hayam, and I'm from St. Mary's Episcopal Church. Nothing that we say can be traced and connected with our institutions because we like our jobs and we don't want to get fired, but sometimes we say silly things on this because we're just young and ridiculous. But we're also men of the cloth. Today we do have Burr Anderson with us, who not only is my father, but also an author and a lawyer, and has written a book on the decline of face-to-face and how we compensate for it. And this has been a study that he's been doing for over 20 years. So just continue this conversation that we have here on air of exploring why the decline in numbers that we see in religious institutions, also in secular institutions, of why are we communing less, why are we seeking less face-to-face, and seeking more connection through digital ways that could be more controlled and more curated and not have to really offer so much of our time. Are we just getting lazy, and is this offering us to lose a sense of community as Americans? So we want to bring on Mr. Francis, who is our first caller for today, about this question, about these thoughts. Francis, welcome back to A Priest and a Rabbi.
Yes, I'm so glad your dad is there. He's really added a lot. And last week, your show was so good, there was nothing for me to call in about. You guys are really doing a great job.
Thank you, sir.
I do feel that the pomp and circumstance of ceremonies and going out is not part of my God experience. And then also with less children nowadays, and soccer and children, less children, less reason to bring the kids to church to get them started, which I think is probably in general a good way to get children started. But with adults and realizing that God lives in their hearts and within them, and to make it a social thing, for me personally, that's not my route to God.
Gotcha. Now, I hear what you're saying. You see the benefits, though, of bringing children together and to plant seeds of community, or plant seeds of God, or both?
I don't know, because I personally chose not to have any children because I was, really too selfish at the time and realized I didn't need a child to complete me in some strange way when I was in my 20s. So I had a really strange evolvement here that worked out really well, because here at 73, I'm not upset, angry, or lonely.
Sure.
Because I've you know, I live with God.
So what I'm hearing from you, Francis, is that the most important thing is that of this personal relationship and finding God within ourselves, and for your experience with that, there's not the need to find that in community, but you can very, very well find that all on your own.
Yes, but well, 8 years ago, I used to go to sometimes three services on Sunday to different places. Anytime I could find a God experience, I went, and then I satisfied my need to go looking for it externally, and I found it internally. So I hope, but I don't think really in general people aren't going to church because they've totally got God. I don't know why they're really not going, but for me the answer was not to go out there looking for God, but to look internally. And the door to the church opens inward, not outward.
Gotcha. That's fantastic. Thank you, Francis. We always love you calling in. You always have great wisdom to offer. So I definitely appreciate that, my brother.
Sure. You guys are doing great. You should go national here very soon.
Yes. Yeah, from your lips to God's ears. So God bless you, brother. Thank you so much. So, yeah. So you know, Francis brings up this interesting point of from a religious perspective that there is a point where, yes, there's a relationship you want to explore with God that you can only find. Yes, you have to find God within your heart, and that is a solo walk at times. That's when you're in the desert. But then there's a big communal aspect of it, and I think a lot of people would say, but you also need to be in community for it. So there's both and.
But I think that that's your statement, is that being in community also has other influencers in there that we are competing for. That make it really challenging.
You mean other communal? There's
other communal events that are going on. And even the day to day, week to week, syndrome. I mean, look, as Jews, you know, our services, we're not Sunday morning. You know, we're Friday night. Well, I can understand. I can empathize with the family that works Monday through Friday. And by the time they get home from work on Friday, they're tired. They want to spend time with their kids, and suddenly, next thing we know, we're asleep. And we've forgotten the joy and the exuberance and everything else that we get out of being in community. But, we also have Saturday morning, So I think a large part of it, too, is, when kids have soccer games or football games or baseball games and this and the other, and they conflict with religious prayer services. What do we do? I know my former community, a lot of the football games were Saturday morning. Well, when I went back to the school district and said, I think you should do them on Sunday morning, they said, no way, because all of our kids are in church. Well, what about your kids that go to synagogue? Oh, we never really thought about that. Of course you didn't, because we're a minority, and we are always overlooked. But at the end of the day, it was the same challenge that we had when it came to, high holidays. We were the only county in the state of New York that did not close for the high holidays. And when we came back and said, it's Yom Kippur, and the night before, we call Kol Nidre, the evening of Yom Kippur, they would have parent-teacher interviews, or the kids would have testing on the next day. We said, this is unacceptable. Well, why not? Would you ever dream of putting a major program or state testing or anything else on Christmas? Well, of course not. Well, then have the same respect. But I think it is about those times and those other distractions that happen in our lives that make it much more challenging for religious institutions to really bring and come together as community.
Yeah, and I would think that would go to this movement of what people would say, we're in a post-religious country, so therefore it's more of a challenge for the community at large to be looking out for the different religious communities and saying, hey, let's clear Fridays, let's clear Saturdays so people can come together. We got Reverend John Tarek on, who just called in. He was our guest last week, who has a lot of great wisdom concerning this topic. So, Reverend John, welcome back to the show, my brother.
Well, thank you very much. I love this show. Love being a guest on it, and now I'm listening with you. It's awesome, but really appreciate the continuation of the conversation we had last week. So one of the things I wanted to bring up, and it just kind of occurred to me over the week thinking about this, is that, and thanks to Burr for his insight too, but what happens in community also is that you become known, right? Mm-hmm. And I think the lack of face-to-face and the desires for solitude or just to be solitary is really this fear of being known. And I think social media feeds into this, right? So we want to be known for our best selves, and that's what we project on social media. So there's a fear, I think, of being in a community to a point where you will be known. And look, in our institutions, our religious institutions, we're saying that you are going to be known. You're certainly known by God, you know, fully. But in community, you are also to be known. And I think this is a huge thing. I think that this is something that people are repelling from in all forms of community. And I think it's aided by social media because they don't want to tarnish the image they've put forward in the digital space.
Yeah, Dad, what do you think about that?
Well, I think that's a really good point because in a lot of ways, people socially today are prefer to be anonymous. This first name basis concept, which was intended to make things casual and not so formal, actually is a way to confine the identity of the person to their first name. If you ask somebody when you meet them, what's your last name? You know, often they flinch, like, it's none of your business what my last name is. And I think there are a lot of other things going on we talked about where there is a need to be have this protective disconnection from other people in a everyday social context. And, you know, this thing with that's going on with gender, you know, like how you like to be addressed in terms of your gender. I think there's the sovereignty of the individual is such that I think what you're saying, I appreciate that, Father, is that there is a need to avoid compromising your sovereignty by being out there. And as opposed to preserving it and controlling it in social media.
Indeed, yeah, and then just that we talked about last week about this epidemic of loneliness. You know, it's interesting because I think people are lonely, but there's not much they want to do about it because there's still this fear of being known, right? So there's it's really paradoxical, you know, and I'm not sure we're ever going to figure it out, but I certainly appreciate the show and your insights, Burr, and just calling this to people's attention because I think the more people understand this and take a look at it from maybe a 30,000-foot view, you realize we have a problem here, and it's not going away.
Well, there was a very, excuse me, I'll just say quickly, there's a very influential book that was written back in the 50s called The Lonely Crowd by David Reisman. And in that book, he looks at the fading, and it was already happening after the war, the fading of institutions such as churches in terms of membership, et cetera. And the lonely crowd referred to people whose way of defining what they were as individuals was by doing what everyone else did, you know, keeping up with the Joneses. You were other-directed. And he concludes that a person's individual growth and health should not be based on what everyone else is owning or building or doing. That's not the way you measure yourself. But it's interesting that the name of the book was The Lonely Crowd.
Awesome. Well, thank you,
like
guys.
That,
really,
like that commandment. Thou shalt not covet, right?
Right.
Coveting.
Well, thank you, Reverend John, for calling in, man. We always love him. Please don't stop calling in because you always bring such incredible insights. So, but thank you, brother.
Absolutely.
Have a good weekend.
Bye. So is that a part of we've been trying in the show today, and you know, is that why? I mean, I'm just asking. The question comes to me is why? So why are we? So Reverend John brings up this paradox that we have that I there's loneliness. There's a huge issue of loneliness. I know the. There's been many organizations that come to the church and say, we've got to tackle this. You have, especially in Martin County, you have elderly who just feel so left behind, feel by themselves. And so that might be a whole different ball of wax. But then I think there's loneliness also in all generations. But then there's this fear of when you do put your foot forward to commune, there's either a lethargy or is it a fear or is it a fear of being known? And if I do become known, am I known in a way that's acceptable and cool? I mean, I can't imagine what it's like growing up now with social media. So I'll just pull back completely. Or if I do jump into the mix of it for the digital community, that I have to look great, I have to look right, or I have to have a message, I have to have the right voice.
But isn't that also through the mode of social media today? Also says that if I am lonely, I can live my life through someone else's experience, right? I go through social media. I see what people are doing with their families, wow, that's really cool. That's neat. Maybe it gives me ideas for my own family, or maybe it's that voyeuristic kind of understanding that I can troll through and see what other people are doing, because I myself have a missing void that I'm not being – that's not being fulfilled in some way.
Right.
It's vicarious.
Absolutely.
You know, there's, I just want to mention one thing, and that is there's been a significant and steady growth in the number of households in the United States where there's a single resident. So you have, I mean, maybe people say, well, that they don't want to live alone. But there is this, when we talk about loneliness, there is this persistent statistic. I think it's up to 25% of America's households consist of one person.
Wow.
And yet, that there was that stat before that there were so many more and more. I mean, this data might have changed, but at least with millennials, of living longer at home. Right, but that might be a comment also on the marital institution, this waiting to get married. I'd rather go solo. Let me work this out. Let me get my career going. So where do we go from here? Is this a good thing? I guess the loneliness complex that we have, which show that this is not a good thing, that we like to do things solo, that we can escape onto a digital sphere and create our own worlds and be voyeuristic and present our best foot forward, or just maybe stare at other families and wonder, why can't I have that, or I'm better than that, or whatever. We get caught up into that easily. But I guess where is the – can we all agree, the three of us, that true community is really found face to face in the flesh. That is a whole other level of community as opposed to even all the wonders of digital connection. There nothing compares to being in the flesh.
I agree with that.
Would you agree with that, Rabbi?
Well, I think also, you know, go back to biblical scripture, right? If the internet existed back then, would God have texted Moses? Or would we go, God spoke to Moses, panim el panim, face to face. And I think it's that notion of face to face. You know, God could have just communicated to Moses. Moses could have heard God or listened to God. But there was that notion that, especially in the Hebrew, that says that God spoke to Moses face to face. There's that social interaction that occurs. God can do anything and everything. But it's that notion that they were both in communication.
In the here and now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I like that. We were talking, Dad, earlier today about this, about the just from what happens on a Sunday morning or on a Saturday or a Friday or whatever respective religious institution you go to. Where else now can you go to this place where you are going to be – you have the invitation to be vulnerable, compassionate, to be to hold hands with another person, to sing these songs together that could be laced in history or that could be newer songs, that there is a time of praise, of praising a power that's beyond yourself, and that you can then state these beliefs that we all believe together, these creeds that we all say together, and then we can break bread together. We can come around from a Christian perspective. We come around this altar, and that we are having this vulnerable, powerful moment of a holy mystery that's beyond ourselves, but we're having this collectively, not just by ourselves, that can bring some people to tears, and you can be there for an hour, and it just gives you something that's so tangible, and you have experiences with other people that is so powerful that I don't know if you can sometimes get that at a baseball stadium, like Dad, when you and I would go to the Indians games and the Indians would win in the playoffs. You turn to the person next to you, you don't know who they are, and you start jumping up and down. You give them a hug, and it's really powerful. I mean, it's amazing. This guy is a stranger next to you,
absolutely.
And sports can do that; they can bring people together. But I get concerned that the steady incline of a lack of connection between human beings that is not good for our own psyche, our own peace of mind. But I wonder also, do we lose connection with God through that, because we find God so much in one another? And if we're being limited in just digital communication more and more through digital communication, and we're having less and less of this face-to-face quality time, right, that Are we going to – does that equate to also – and I'm not asking you both this – does that equate to a loss of connection with the higher power?
I think,
No, I was just going to say the first caller, I guess, would answer that in the negative. He said that he was getting nourishment consistently without – If I understood his what he was
yes
Francis yeah
yes what do you think, Rabbi?
Well, I think there's because there are times, and I remember when I was in college and I would go to services on Friday nights for Shabbat, and there were times where I would literally say to myself out loud, I need this, or I'll leave services and go on my way home and say, you know, I'm really glad I came. Now, okay, it's different. Turned out to be a rabbi, and this is important and meaningful work for what I do. But I also wonder how much of just our community or membership take that opportunity to allow that space to enter into one's mind frame. To be able to say, maybe I'm frustrated. Maybe I just don't want to go. I live in Palm City. It takes me 14 minutes, 15 minutes to get in. You know, it's the lead up to it. We see with the same thing with religious school on Sunday mornings. I mean, how many of our kids say, I don't want to go? And then once they're there, it's almost being grateful and being thankful of saying, I'm glad I'm here. And I think it's that time to, even though there are challenges and stressors and distractions in our lives, to be able to come into it and say, you know, I think right now, I think I need this. And beyond just the needing it, I just need the time to shut off. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's, I think, one of the beautiful things, you know, certainly from a Judaic perspective, is that Friday night, I can shut off, not me because I'm up there preaching, but for the person who has joined us, I can shut off the world for that hour, however long services are. I assure you I try to make it within an hour. Okay, but for that hour to say, I'm not going to let the outside world penetrate into where I'm at. I am here with God. I am here with my community. And I'm here internally with myself. And I don't need the outside world to converge in. That I can be settled. I can be grounded. You know, the rest of the world will go on moment after moment after moment. But for this sacred time that we're together in community, I think sometimes it's about really almost being vocal and being loud and saying, I need this.
And so if to that point, do you think there'll be the pendulum will swing back and religion will find a boost because people are seeking that more and more, being like just hungry for it? Because I have a friend of mine, an atheist, who said, you know, Christian, you know, as you get older and you get out of school, before the school was your community, he goes, now my community is the people at work. And that's a whole different sense of community that you have with them. You know, you're a 9-to-5, everyone's getting paid. Hopefully you get along with them, but then you go home and, you know, you're all focused on a task. You don't have too many vulnerable moments and compassionate moments with one another. And is in my other community is really my family. And then I could go join a kickball league. You know, this is what he was telling me. He's like, the what I do miss, because he's not an atheist, because what I do miss was church, where you would have these chili cook-offs and spaghetti dinners and
a coffee hour,
and we get together, and then we do this weird worship thing and talk about the higher power, and then we go do service in the community together. And there's this big cause, this big reason why we're doing it, because we have these big grand, you know, things like we're going to save the world. He goes, I don't really find that in other things, but he lost his faith, so he's like, but I'm not going to go find that in the church. But do you think that there's going to be sort of like a resurgence in the States? We see the resurgence in other countries. We see the resurgence of religion, how it's growing greatly.
I think we're seeing it now in terms of how religious institutions are changing their ability to bring people in. Right? You guys have a contemporary service. We sometimes do alternative services. We do stuff that's a little out of the box. We do Shabbat evening services on the beach. We do beach Shabbats. You know, in July, we're actually going to do a Shabbat in snorkel, right, so that the community can come together. We'll do a prayer service for 20 minutes, a half hour, and then spend the rest of the morning snorkeling, seeing God's creative world from the depths below. That, I think, 50 years ago, would almost be considered taboo. What are you doing? You pray in the walls of a sanctuary. And I think to be able to branch out and to be able to say, let's find our membership and those those abilities to bring people in where they're at and to excite them brings back more community. And I think a lot of churches are doing it. I think I know a lot of synagogues are doing it in terms of trying to do alternative modes of interaction to bring people together.
Yeah, what do you think, Dad? I mean, just as your experience here, and we're in the final minutes of the show, that will there be a – can you see a resurgence? Can you see – because the numbers are not showing that yet. And I think there's a reason why Mormonism is growing, because it is so based on community and it's so based on the family that I can see people being like, I really want that in my life. I'm missing that. But what are your thoughts?
Well, I liked what the rabbi said about when you go to the service, this is a way of just separating yourself just for a moment in a sacred way from the outside world. As the man said, you're flung out of your domesticity. These things are in trends. There are trends that come and go. I guess my concern is that the technology that has driven a lot of this is so powerful that as long as people are forming friendships based on an image on a screen, and as long as they genuinely in their heart feel that they're getting the social value out of these alternative channels in lieu of personal, you know, face-to-face interaction in the here and now, that this is always going to be a problem. On the other hand, I think people, there's going to be a steady realization that I'm not getting the nourishment. This is not an adequate substitute. It's a downgrade.
Okay, so this is good. So I think our final thoughts here is that, you know, obviously as people who attend church and synagogue, that we really believe of that great, honest connection that you can have, that that's so much more fulfilling. So the job for you and me, Rabbi, is the ability to be able to give that away even in more creative ways, so people can be like, holy cow, this is on a whole other level. For Gen Y, Gen Z, who might be used to the digital connection, be like, this is awesome. I love digital connection. I connect with all these different people in all these different ways. But then say, but there's something so special when I show up on Sunday or Saturday or Friday. Something so powerful that's going on there that's beyond that. So, all right. Well, God bless you all. And whatever community you're a part of, that you nurture it, that you love it, that you stay consistent with it, that it's a muscle that is so important for us growth. We would say as children of God, it is so important for us and as children of God for us to find God in one another, and that the digital sphere will give a good introduction, a good way to start it. But really, you got to get face to face. So final thoughts, Rabbi?
I think that's just it. You know, allow ourselves the opportunity, be open, and continue those relationships and those conversations. Panim el panim, face
yeah.
to face.
Go to your neighbor this weekend, knock on the door, say hello, how are you? I miss you. Here's a cake. And you can find us on a podcast, A Priest and a Rabbi, as well for all episodes. Dad, it's been great to have you on here.
Thank you for inviting me. Thank you.
And so all of you, God bless you, and go love on somebody. And we will see you here next Friday on A Priest and a Rabbi.